Poder Aprender, el podcast que te ayuda a aprender idiomas, hobbies y skills de manera más efectiva. Acá hablamos sobre hábitos de aprendizaje, práctica deliberada y estrategias para aprender mejor. Mi nombre es Walter Freiberg y te invito a desarrollar tu poder de aprender para alcanzar tus metas personales y profesionales. Today's guest is Leila Lababi, a strategist, author, and founder of Mind Impact. After starting her career advising CEOs and investors at Oliver Wyman, Leila shifted her focus to helping purpose-driven leaders scale their impact from the inside out. She now works with founders and executives across Europe and MENA, helping them unlock high-performing talent, build conscious leadership, and scale sustainably without burnout. Her upcoming book, The $1 Billion Purpose, coming in 2025, dives into how companies like Patagonia and Airbnb outperform the market by putting people and purpose at the heart of growth. Leila, welcome to Poder Aprender.
Thank you, Walter. It's an honor to be here with you.
You started out in high-stakes strategy consulting, and I wonder what personal learning curve did you go personally through when shifting toward more human-centered, purpose-driven work?
Very good question. And difficult to answer in a way that learning for me happens all the time. I went to strategy consulting because I wanted to learn. I didn't want to be in one place. I wanted to learn from different companies. I wanted to learn how they work. I wanted to learn how they interact with each other. I wanted to learn about the industry. I wanted to learn about their country, their culture. So I was working with different countries and different cultures. And that for me was what I loved doing and what I love living. And then from that, I switched from like corporate job and being something which is really structured into being an entrepreneur. I was like, okay, let's start from zero because now you need to learn to unlearn. You need to unlearn your old patterns. You need to unlearn the old thing, the old way of doing things and go for a new way of building a business based on what I call beginner's mind, right? So not assume that you know already, but just try some things out because what's used to work for you may not work anymore now because you're not part of a big brand. You don't have a big name. So this would not work for you to run your business. You need to build it somewhere else, which is more based on value, more based on connections, more based on everything that an entrepreneur does.
I love what you said about it. It sounds like more taking responsibility for your own future, for your own destiny. And I so appreciate what you say about unlearning. People underestimate the power of unlearning. Sometimes it's all about learning and we skip over like, maybe I need to do things very differently from what I used to. So thank you for that.
Thank you for asking the question.
Many of our listeners are very passionate about building skills and exploring new paths. I wonder what hobby or learning habit outside of work has shaped your perspective the most as a leader now?
My first teacher is nature. I learned through nature, like I look at birds and I look at trees and like how the way they live, etc. My second teacher is my kids because they see everything from the lens of someone who is discovering it, like, oh my God, Disneyland. And then you're being Disneyland for the third or fourth time. Like, oh my God, this flower is so beautiful. And then, you know, you learn to see things differently. And then they see something that we are not used to see. And the third thing that really helped me when I went to entrepreneurship is surfing. All my life, I was thinking, I want to go surfing, but I didn't have the occasion, the opportunity. Also, it wasn't a priority. And then since I moved back to Morocco like 3 years ago, I was like, I want to start surfing. And this was my main mindset coach, the waves, like going with the waves, not going against the waves, catching a wave that is at your level, having fun when you're catching the wave and not thinking about the other waves. Sometimes taking time to relax and not just rush, but just see what is the right wave to take and not just stare there, but there are waves coming in. So you need also to catch them out. So many things on the mindset shift that I talked about moving from corporate to entrepreneurship that surfing taught me in the way to handle my energy, in the way to go on the market, in the way to show up, and in the way to have fun along the way.
I appreciate what you said about being sensitive to what's going on with the water, and also timing that and managing your energy and which wave are you riding when you're waiting, being patient. I don't surf, and I know that's one of the ultimate sport skills because of that relationship that it has with nature and moving along that flow.
And you cannot like surf whatever you choose to, you know, you have to see like what are the conditions, the natural conditions, and adapt yourself to that. And you cannot surf any spot. And sometimes when you take a wave and you just want to rush into things, then you just miss out on other waves that are better. And they're like, because you weren't watching, you weren't seeing what was happening. And sometimes my coach was like, you know, you wanted to gain time. You're losing so much time by just hustling here. And I saw my behavior. And this behavior, we also sometimes do it on a business side, right?
Yeah. It's like keeping an eye on the big picture and not being short-sighted.
Absolutely.
And as you said, the spot that you are picking to surf, and also which days, because maybe there are days that are not very conducive to surfing or times of the year.
Yes. And this goes against the hustling culture. You know, the hustling way of doing entrepreneurship is like you need to wake up every day at 5 a.m. and then to take your coffee and then work until midnight. But all days are not the same. You don't have the same energy every day. You can do something in 4 hours one day, and the other day, it will take you ages. So if you don't accept that and take this time to recharge, you will always run on a low battery.
Yeah. And talking about skills in general, I know that you help leaders perform at their best with less effort.
Yes.
And what skills beyond strategy do you see as essential to becoming that kind of today?
It's learning to ride the wave. It's exactly that, actually. So this is what mindfulness teached me, right? And now what I'm doing is a mix of what I've learned through the years working with Fortune 100 CEOs, which is around strategy. It's good to have a structure. It's good to have clear vision. This is always great. But then if you don't have this presence to listen to the ground, what's happening on the ground, if you don't have a team that is collaborative, that trusts you and they work together, you will be the bottleneck of your business. And you will also struggle to transform strategy into real actions on the ground, into transformation, to have the real execution that will have the impact, right? So in order to do that, there is a big mindfulness shift, is to be aware of your presence, of your energy, of actually not what only you're saying, but what your team is capturing as a message from you. Some leaders come to me and say, I don't understand. I'm all about collaboration. I'm all about people coming in and bringing their ideas. And when you ask the question to the team, they're like, really?
Team.
Are you sure? Yeah. So it's not something that the leader is saying, but it's something that is showing up in the way he leads. And in the way he or she leads can sometimes share a message around, I don't really trust you in what you're saying. Your idea doesn't seem to be so brilliant. Even if they don't say that, like you can see it in the way of talking, in the way of responding, in the way of reacting, in the way of rushing, in the way of telling people what to do. And this is a learnable skill. So for me, the mindfulness part is an important accelerator of the execution of the strategy that leaders want to have an impact on the ground.
It makes sense. It makes a lot of sense to me. Sometimes people deal more or are more concerned with the words, and it's more to that. So there's like how they're showing up, their presence, who they are being in that situation. That's something that goes beyond words.
Goes beyond words and directs into emotions.
And you made a connection between mindfulness and leadership. And if leadership would be, let's say that it's a skill, and I see that there's a component of mindfulness here, do you think it can be learned, such as a language or a musical instrument or surfing? And if that's the case, what practices can be helpful to make it second nature over time?
This is a beautiful question, because what we have been taught at school is like the only thing that you can learn is math, languages, science, literature, they also philosophy, but listening to your emotions and understanding your internal engine is something that we haven't been taught. And then also there is a big belief around you're this or you're that. This is what we call like the fixed mindset and growth. You're this or you're that. You're nice people or bad people. You know how to talk or you don't know how to talk. You know how to lead or you don't know how to lead. You know how to manage your emotion or you don't know how to manage emotion. Right or wrong, binary, like 0, 1, 0, 1. And all the other skills, we have a range of gray. Like you don't have someone who speaks English or who doesn't speak English, right? You have level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, Spanish as well, mathematics as well. But then when we go into emotions, it's like, he knows how to handle them. He doesn't know how to handle them. He's a great leader. He's a bad leader, right? Or nothing. And then we go into this binary because we haven't said or we haven't learned from our childhood, one, that it's a learnable skill, and two, how to learn, and three, what are the different levels, and four, how to recognize those levels, and five, how to train ourselves in each level to attain the level after that.
So it's great that there's hope.
I mean, there is hope to everyone. And the hope is, if I talk about my own story, if I thought to myself, like, I'm hopeless, I wouldn't be here today. If I said to myself, like, oh my God, you're so stressed out. Oh my God, you don't know to do anything but hustle. Oh my God, you're yelling all the time. Oh my God, you're always complaining. And then I sat with myself and like, that's the way you are. Shame on you.
Can you tell us personal experience of transformation, how you shift from one being this way to this other way?
Yes. I can share an experience at work where I was trained to be this pushy, like you need to push. The management is like, you need to be really strong, especially when you're a woman, you need to push harder because people will not listen to you. I had this experience. So I was like more pushy and seeing like why people are not answering, seeing people like raising their eyes to the sky. Again, she's going to. When I started training myself into mindfulness, I started learning actually what was happening inside and not just the words that were coming from my mouth. And making the link between my thoughts, my emotions, and my body sensations. So when I'm saying something, and if I feel stretched, and then I feel like inside me I'm angry, I know that the only word that would get from my mouth are words of anger. And that people will not listen because people don't like anger. So whatever you said, if it's like, you're a great person, and you see like, I can say great. I'm angry, right? And what happens, like, I went one day to a retreat, silence retreat, and I came back. And it was not only me, but I saw what was happening in the room. And when I was in the room, coming from the silence retreat, and it was a strategic meeting, everyone was yelling the way I was yelling before and starting to make their point. It's my point. I'm saying this. I'm the one who's right. No. That's some point, I want to also express myself, but there was no room for that. Who's going to listen? Everyone is only thinking about what's on his mind. So what I did is like, I started whispering. I started something. And then people turned in like, what is it? It was surprising for them. And it made me smile because it was disruptive, completely yeah. Disruptive. It's like, people were curious. Why is she whispering first? Second, She's saying, and third, what's happening here? So I was able to make my point by whispering. And I would have never done this before, training my mind into seeing what was going on, understanding what I was feeling, and then holding the energy to speak differently. And I don't just use that at work, but also with my kids. You know, sometimes kids come like, and then you start whispering like, what? Or sometimes I start just like moving my lips and my mouth, like, and my little one is saying,
that's your sacred weapon.
So this is one example. Yeah.
I appreciate what you say about how the practice of meditation and mindfulness can be helpful in a leadership context. So you said that you attended a retreat. I also have experience with silent retreats and meditation. And I know that's something that it might sound like a stretch for many people, or like, this is too extreme, or I'm not doing that. I would like to practice mindfulness, and this is not something I'm willing to do yet. What are other more gentle ways or maybe easier ways that people can start leaning in more into mindfulness practice without going to a long silent retreat?
Yeah, sure. The first thing for busy leaders is just not to rush from a meeting to another. I've lived so many years, like you have the meeting ending at 2 p.m., the other one is starting at 2 p.m. Like leave just 5 minutes between a meeting and another. 15 minutes would be great, but 5 minutes will change the way you will show up, will change your presence, and will change your energy and the receptivity of your message. 5 to 10 minutes. And just take them to breathe, to go for a walk, to hydrate yourself with water, and connect to the present moment, not thinking about this is what I'm going to say in this meeting, or this is what I'm going to happen, not just stay with that, with where you are for 5 minutes, and try it. Because what we don't do is like, people say, give me 3, give me 5, give me 10 ways of doing it. And then I give them 10. And then they're like asking, have you tried anyone? Oh, I don't remember. Too many. So prefer to give one. Try just this one. In your calendar, never allow to have a meeting starting when the other is ending. And allow this 10 minutes step. And way of doing it, a trick of doing it, is instead of having 1 hour meeting, you program 45 minutes. Instead of having 30 minutes of meeting, you program 20 minutes of meeting. And sometimes people will find it weird. Why 20 minutes? Because, you know, if you program from 2 p.m. to 2:20, nobody's going to put on your calendar a meeting at 2:20. Unless if you're doing 20:20:20. This is not the point, right? This is a trick that you can use.
That's wonderful. And yeah, so the strategy or the system would be not to have meetings back to back first, not to have meetings back to back. So that's an idea to create some space between meetings. And the one strategy to do that is you don't do that like by finishing a meeting at the hour. You finish it before, like on the hour or like in 30 minute slots. Instead of finishing at, I don't know, 11 a.m., you finish 10:50 or 10:45. And so that would be the way that you, otherwise it's like, I agree that it would be awkward to let's meet at 2:05, like 2:05, right? So, or 10 minutes past two. And I know there's people who might be, maybe are starting meetings at 15 after the hour. And usually it's like we start at the hour mark or after 30 minutes. So yeah, that's wonderful. That's very practical and actionable. And talking about exhaustion and disconnection, what signs do you notice when someone's performance is masking exhaustion or disconnection in your experience? And what's something they can shift to do something different to rebalance themselves?
Yeah, you will see that in different levels. You will see in the way they show up. You will see it probably in their memory. So they're not present, they don't remember what you said. And sometimes they ask, could you repeat that? Could you please repeat that? You will see it in their multitasking. So they're with you, but actually they're on their phone or they're on something else. You will see it in the decisions, the way they're making their decisions. Is it a reaction or a response? And there is a big difference between reaction or response. Reaction is more based on fear, on stress, and we need to do this now, otherwise this will happen. Otherwise this will happen. It's the fight or flight mode, right? The response is first they acknowledge what's going on. They're able to talk about their emotions, to see how they feel, because people who are just watching, they say, I don't feel well, but not feeling well is not an emotion. Someone who is more embodied leadership and knows where he's going and is not hustling is someone who can tell you how he feels with more precision and can also make the link between how he feels and what is just happening. And
could you give us an example? In this case, how would you make more specific?
Yes. So let's say I had a client who was working on an AI product for a while, right? And AI products right now, there are so many companies working on AI at the same time. And so many of them are sometimes doing the same, more or less, tackling the same markets. And this client of mine was in a final discussion to get a project to test his product on the ground with the client, right? and he was in the final line with another competitor. And this competitor had more features. He was doing the same thing as my client, but more features. And his reaction at first was like, let's build all the features that he has. This was a reaction. And then when he saw the timeline, like the presentation will be 1 month, we cannot anyway build all the features that the others have. So after the reaction, he took time to breathe and he tried to connect to what's really important. What is the client that they're trying to have exactly wants? Does he want more features? Who is it? This feature, but much better. And what is the competitive advantage that they do have? Not the what the other has, what they do have. And this is connection with the alignment. So when you're out of alignment, or when you're acting out of fear or acting out of defense, you try to imitate what the others are doing. And imitation, we know it, is always just not as good as the original, usually. And when you're strong in what you're doing, you know what you're doing, and then you know that you have something which is really strong, you connect to your power. And when you connect back to your power, you make something great out of it, and you go with conviction. So when you pitch with conviction, you work on something that's exactly your zone of genius, and this is how you compete. This is what, for example, Netflix did, right? If we took concrete examples that people know about, like Netflix, they didn't say, oh, let's do all type of entertainment. No, they said, we're going just to do streaming, just streaming. What Slack, for example, Slack, they could say, okay, let's do everything which is around the collaboration within the workplace. They're like, no, just the communication part of collaboration. And you have so many other tools that you have so many other features, but they're not billion-dollar businesses. And this is the power of focus. So intention drives focus. Focus drives performance. And performance that is driven by simplicity and power in one place, rather than all over the place.
Yeah, they made a decision to excel at one thing. It's not they didn't want to excel at a lot of things. And what you said about your client, it reminds me also, it makes me think when people are competing with others or are competing with themselves, they're trying to upgrade themselves and become a better version of or their product, instead of looking around, oh, what's everybody else doing? I need to do the same. I need to catch up with them.
Yeah, exactly. You remind me of something. I had a coach one day who told me, you need to be the best strategy consultant. I was like, no. I'm not the best strategy consultant. There's so many great strategy consultants out there. I'm differentiating myself by being at the intersection of strategy and mindfulness. This is my sweet spot because this is what's aligned with the way I do things and the way I help my clients. And people will recognize me directly. They don't come to me to say, because Leila is the best. No. Or it's the one next doors. No. Because they feel that my story connect to their story. We don't need more than that.
I have another idea about how you can call yourself. You wanted to hear it?
Yes.
The whispering coach.
I've heard this one, like the CEO whisperer and this. Yeah, I've heard it.
And you have a story about, I mean, yeah, so there's that. But I also share this based on what you share about whispering in the meetings.
Yeah.
How you use whispering.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were talking about performance, and in this podcast, that's something that I usually talk about, people who are interested in mastery or learning something to a high degree. And how can we keep that balance when we, people who are very interested in mastering something, and how can we stay in high performance without falling into perfectionism or burnout?
The word is passion. Because when you have the passion, like perfectionism, it's just refinement because you're doing it out of pleasure. One thing that happens, because I work with companies that are scaling, and companies that are scaling, the leader is scaling himself, but he's scaling also his team. And the scaling, the way I define it and the way I explain it to my clients, is just make sure that you move from a team of generalists to a team of specialists. So that each person focuses on its her or his zone of genius. Because when you do that, you're not competing about like perfectionism, and you're not like against the timing. time flies and you don't have the other things that you need to do that prevent you from learning what you have to learn. And this is something that happens often. We say, I want to learn this skill, but then I have so many things in my life that I want to do. So I'm frustrated because I cannot spend time and focus and energy on this skill. So I would say for each of us, we need to pick and choose and feel what energizes us. And also what sometimes we're good at already and go to the next level. Because what I found myself at like, even at my level, when I started entrepreneurship, I had to learn so many different skills that I didn't know about before. Like, you need to learn how to sell, you need to learn how to market, you need to learn how to build a product, you need to learn how to organize yourself, you need to learn how to drive revenue, you need to learn finance, you need to learn like legal stuff, so many things. And this, I've heard and I've read somewhere that you just need to spend 20 hours or something to learn the basic of a skill. And yeah, this for me is important. I love doing that. Like, spend 20 hours on one skill and learn it. But then trying to have the perfection in all the skills is where we burn out. It's not trying to have perfection in one skill that burns us out. It's trying to be perfect in everything. I want to speak English perfectly. And now, like, I just switched from French to English. So if I was like, I want to speak English perfectly and have a business that is perfect and landing pages that are perfect and my book should be perfect. No, right? So one thing that you're perfect at, that is at the core of what you do, and then the rest comes as a support where you're maybe average and learning along the way, but most of your focus goes into one or two skills.
Yeah, picking your battles.
Yeah, pick your battles.
And that's something also that comes to me. And you're a polyglot. You speak three languages. You speak Arabic, you speak English, you speak French. And that's something that I heard around people who learn languages. And people assume that they learn like three languages or more languages at once. And it's possible to learn things sequentially. Like, first I learned this, and people don't know. Maybe they assume that I was, that a person was learning everything at once, and they see somebody at their, in their 30s or 40s, and they are assuming that they did everything and they were doing everything at once. And maybe there was a path. There was something for a few years they did this, then for another few years they did this other thing. And that's how they ended having multiple skills and developing different things in their lives.
Oh my God, what you're saying like resonates so much. Because we look at people like the final product and we assume that everything happened at once. Okay, they've learned, they like, they know all that. Yeah, but he's 40 or 30 or 50. So they focus on one thing for 5 years and one thing for 5 years. And it's normal. Like, at the end, they're just merging all those things together and it works perfectly. But the learning happens sequentially, as you just said.
And there's something that you also speak about, and you were talking about scaling before. You help companies who are scaling, and this idea of scaling from the inside out. And how do you apply that not only to beyond business, to personal reinvention, or when people are learning a skill? What are the implications of learning, scaling from the inside out when we're learning and when we are reinventing ourselves?
So scaling from inside out apply to learning. This is a beautiful question. This is the first time I'm having this. So let me think with you about this one. This is something that I apply to myself. I don't care if someone has a better English than me. I don't care if someone is a better guitarist than me or plays better piano than me. I just look at how I was doing 1 year or 2 years before, and I compare to that. I'm like, oh my God. And sometimes we can also learn from ourselves and teach ourselves. So sometimes I can watch myself on video talking and see in their faces like, oh, here I was doing this, here I was doing that. So usually we wait for other people to give us feedback on how we react, to give us feedback on our language, to give us feedback on what to do better. But there is something from inside out, is asking ourselves the question, this happened this way, and reflecting, how could I do better next time? What should I learn? What do I want to learn? And we see ourselves as an evolution, learning an evolution over a lifetime, rather than achieving a specific goal or looking like someone or having a skill in the same way as someone else. This is from my inside out. It's like me, my own performance with what I love, with where I want to go, what's the next thing for me to learn, and how can I do better?
That's amazing. And that's something that I agree that I can see myself also in that, and that I underutilize what's available to me to improve on my own learnings. And that's something that I see all around. We are waiting for someone else to give us feedback. Now with this AI, I want AI to give me feedback. I want the feedback of AI. And I recently was reflecting on this, how we are disempowering ourselves also in terms of what we can do on our own right now, because now with technology, it's so much easier to get that type of feedback. It's like now we don't even need humans to tell us. We can rely entirely on feedback or the reflections from AI, what the AI is seeing on us, what we should improve. That, in my opinion, that's costing us discernment and our discernment skills and powers. And we become very dependent on others or technologies.
I love what you're saying. And the word discernment that you used is very powerful. So it's not AI. Like AI is not going to do to us anything. Like if we use it, we don't use it, it's our choice. It's the discernment while using it. I don't mind asking AI for feedback. I don't mind asking people for feedback. But then discernment is the key skill also to develop. So what am I going to do with this feedback, right? And learning happens outside of classrooms because we were used to learn in the classroom and go outside and then apply the learning. What entrepreneurship, for example, taught me, and when I work with my clients, is action is your classroom. And then reflecting on your actions is your learning curve. So it's the other way around. And if we take AI and we apply it into the way we were doing before, like classroom, AI teach me this, AI teach me that, we will not move. Let's act, maybe use AI, and then discern.
Yeah, it's what we do with that. It's what we do, how we are using it. I know that you are writing a book, The Billion Dollar Purpose, that is coming out this year, 2025. And what has surprised you the most in the writing process of this book and how this writing has stretched you as a creator and as a thinker?
So the book is already out now.
Oh.
It's already available. And it took me, I thought at the beginning it will be a 1 to 2 month process, and then it took me 14 months. And the way I wrote it was through first interviews. So I interviewed CEO of big companies, founders of small to medium sized companies, more than 200 interviews across the world. And that was really powerful because we see that we are all different, but at the core, it's more or less the same problems around if you want to scale, you cannot go alone. If you want to scale, it's not only, you need also to scale yourself in order to scale your business, to scale your own. And then you need also to surround yourself with the right people and upskill them. So the link between the skills and the scaling, you know, scale skills, goes together. Mm-hmm. What was really remarkable, and I felt like it was an unconscious bias, right? So people, when we talk now about scaling, we talk a lot about scaling means selling more. Scaling means doing more marketing. Scaling means more systems, more. And then we forget the core of what a business is, that is the value creation. In order to create the value, skills are at the core of value creation. So you can say whatever you want and spend your time selling, and this is the hustling mode, and then people come into your business and then seeing that the value of what you're offering is not good enough. So they will leave, they will buy one time, but they will not come back and they will not recommend you. So you will spend your time hustling, trying to sell to someone else. This happens a lot of time. And moving from the hustling culture to building strong foundations is through building your own skills, building the skills of your team, and making sure that you have the real value creation for your clients. So when your clients come, they have the great product, the great service, the great customer journey, and you can also have more upsells because you have more value to provide them. So you can build a very successful business with less clients, but a bigger client lifetime value. And this is something that we don't talk about enough. And that's upskilling is the key to unlock this exponential growth, especially that it compounds over time. So when you do your selling, it's like something, it brings a result or it doesn't bring a result. But your product, when you upskill yourself, when you upskill your team, sky is not even the limit of what you can create as a value for your customer. And then when everyone is talking about you, then the selling part becomes easier.
We are all interested in building new skills. And at the same time, we have limiting ideas and limiting beliefs around that. And my question for you is, for someone who's building a skill, can be in their business or new language or side project, what's one belief about success that they might need to let go in order to really grow?
The response is in your question. Is accepting to fail.
Not so much about success.
Yes, because, you know, I mean, what is success? What is success? It's like you done it the first time and then you said, oh, it's not the way of doing it. Okay, let me know. What do I learn from that? Okay, let me try another one. What did I learn from that? And when you overthink and you don't do the first step, then it's difficult to learn. It's like people want to move from babies to adults. But you go from baby to adult and like even a baby, it just lies one day and like, I know how to walk. No, they get up and then they fail. They get up and then they fail. And at some point they learn to walk. Then they learn how to speak. And somehow, I don't know, we have lost this along the way, thinking that being an adult, it's going from zero to one on a skill and to go directly to success. But failures are their steps to success. And this is something I saw also in corporate job. I saw many people like saying, okay, I want to go to the next layer, corporate layer. So the way for me to do it is to succeed and not to fail. So they play not to fail. But by playing not to fail, what they do is that actually they don't learn as much as someone else. And they think that the career is linear. This is not true. It sounds like a safe game, but it's a dangerous game. It's a dangerous game because the person, I've seen an image when they put two balls. One who is going linear like this, descending linear like this, and one which is in sinusoidal. And which ball arrives at the end the fastest? The one who's doing this. The one who's sinusoidal. So actually, when you go linear, you think that you're going faster, but life doesn't work this way, right? It's ups and downs that can give you exponential growth and compounded effects. So when you go in linear, you don't use this compounded effects. And compounded effects, would that be in finance, would that be in skill, would that be in anything, is what really help us to skyrocket our growth.
Thank you for that. And is there anything else you'd like to add to this conversation before completing? And I know that you have a resource that we're going to share at the end. And before getting there, is there anything else you'd like to add that we haven't covered?
No, I think we're good. It was a nice conversation. Especially, I love that because learning was always my first value on the list.
It's mine too. Yeah, learning.
Learn, right? It's like always the thing to learn. And you know what? Like, I see that people who do things to learn, usually they succeed fast. Success comes faster. And when you do things to succeed, then you're so focused on doing the thing right that when there is opportunity for learning to go faster, you're like, no, I don't have time for that. I don't have time for that. I need to stay focused on my success. So you don't enjoy the process and you don't take the leverages that learning can enable you to have. Mm. And the other way around, when you learn, actually you're having fun along the way. And then you arrive at some point, you're like, oh my God, I know how to do this already. I didn't know one day I'll be able to do that. Even my English, for example, by practicing, sometimes I'm like, I have this new vocabulary that I didn't know that I had in my mind. This is new. And I'm very happy about it.
You surprise yourself.
Yes. And this is what life is about. Like, we love surprising ourselves and seeing new things and discovering.
Yeah. When we are talking about nature and your kids, you are astonished about nature, about your kids, by their sense of curiosity. And that's how we keep ourselves in that learning spirit.
Yes. I want to add only one thing that just came to my mind. We can learn from anyone, right? And this, I find it a lot in the corporate world and also in entrepreneurship, when they're like, I will not learn from this person because they don't have my results. They don't have my thing. And when I said, I learned from my kids, you know, so we can learn from anyone, but not anything. Each person from me is more advanced than us on something, for sure. So there is not something like comparison, someone is more advanced than the other. Each one of us is more advanced than the other on something because they focus on that skill. And this curiosity to say, what can I learn from this person is what helps us to connect more, to listen more, and to grow faster.
That's lovely. Thank you. And I can see your value, learning value shining there, your willingness to learn from anyone. I can learn from anyone. That's beautiful. Leila, it was great having you in my podcast, Pueden Aprender. And there's a resource that you have to share with my audience. Could you tell us more about that and what is this for?
Yeah, so the book is already out now. So you can have it if you want. It's on Amazon. It's on the link. And on the same link, there is a bonus that goes with the book. And the bonus is like all the cheat sheets of the book. So if you want like to go directly to the cheat sheets and understand how to scale using the skills, scaling your team, scaling yourself, scaling your mission, scaling your adaptability, this is available for free as a resource.
Thank you. So they can find it as The Billion Dollar Purpose by Leila Lababi on Amazon?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Great. Awesome. It was wonderful having you, Leila. Thank you for sharing all your learnings and for your mindful presence with my audience.
Thank you for welcoming me in your show. It was a pleasure.
Puedes escuchar Poder Aprender en las principales plataformas de podcast y en YouTube. También te invito a suscribirte al newsletter semanal en poderaprender.com para enterarte de los nuevos episodios del podcast y otras novedades para aprender mejor. En redes sociales puedes buscar este podcast como Poder Aprender. Encontrá todos los links en la descripción. Y si te gusta mucho, si te sirve el contenido del podcast, te invito a dejar una reseña y una calificación de 5 estrellas en Spotify o Apple Podcasts para que estos episodios lleguen a más personas y que más gente pueda aprender mejor. Eso es todo por ahora. Nos vemos en un próximo episodio. Sigan aprendiendo y acuérdense de practicar bien.